And if you look at the superhero just genre, he's, you know, other than like Hawkeye, he's the only one with no powers. You know, he's the quarterback from the Jets. He's used like the, because I even asked him and Sam Jones, who would win in a fight, you or Superman? He goes, no, 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 I would team up with Superman. We'd go, you know, fight together. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that was the whole crux of it, is the bringing all these communities and all the planets together to kind of overthrow the bad guy. There's a lot to be, you know, like underlying about if that's a true superhero just because he doesn't have powers. I think absolutely.
This is Technophile Real Talk. Thank you to this episode's sponsor, Checkpoint Software.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Technophile Real Talk. I'm Sia, and this week I've got two really great friends of mine. One new, one not so new, but we're all friends now because why? We're doing Flash Gordon. I know, everyone. Ooh. Hold up. So before we like get the crowd in a frenzy, Bob, Matthew, welcome to Technophile Real Talk.
Thank you for having me. It's been a lifelong dream of mine to be on your show, Sia, so I'm thankful for the opportunity.
And Matthew's like, yeah, man, where am I? How did I get on this show? This is what happens when you say hi to people in Dallas and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I just got suckered into a show. So, okay, guys, Flash Gordon, when I approached you guys separately to talk about, you know, hey, would love to have you be a guest on Technophile Real Talk. I mean, Bob, flat out, it was going to be Flash Gordon or nothing. Or what was the other option?
No, there was like 10. I would have been fine with anything.
No, you wouldn't. You told me. You're like, no, these are the ones we're doing, period. Don't be nice now, young man. We know you.
It was during the, it was right before Comic-Con. So, of course, I had to pick Flash Gordon.
Of course. You know, I've seen Flash Gordon like in my ute. So it's been a few moon cycles since I've seen it. So I just, full disclosure, you guys, I am kind of seeing it with fresh new eyes. So this will be very interesting. But okay, Matthew, you're not new to the whole Flash Gordon. There's some history that you have with this movie. Am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I remember seeing it in the theater very clearly. And it left a, you know, pretty big impression. And it's funny, my college roommate was into it, and we were both film majors, and you know, we were all into you know, Italian movies, like all kinds of foreign films. And then he said, well, you know who produced that thing is Dino De Laurentiis, right? And I was like, oh, really? And he says, that's why the costumes are so crazy. Like, it's kind of funny, you know, everyone when the movie kind of came out sort of blew it a lot of there was like a lot of high-mindedness about the film, like, oh, it's silly and da da da. But it's not so silly. It's actually like very, it's cutting edge of like fashion and style, because the guy that was the, you know, the costume designer was an Italian costume designer. What was his name? Danilo Donati is the guy's name. And so like the guy worked for like Fellini and Pasolini, you know, Zeffirelli, this. This is like a big time Italian crew that works with De Laurentiis. And so it's actually a very sophisticated looking movie from a design and fashion standpoint. Like a lot of women should see this movie and know, like, it's the height of fashion. The people that like did the set design, another Italian guy, and that did the costumes. So, you know, okay. there's always a deeper story with something like this, right? Who's making it and who's behind it.
On top of that, it's still the greatest movie soundtrack in the history. Oh my God,
soundtrack is so good. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Queen, right?
It was Queen. Oh, yeah. Every song, even the little, the high pitched, I'm not going to do it on this, but that was Freddie Mercury. Like a lot of people don't realize in the movie. So yeah, Queen, absolutely. If you haven't watched Flash Gordon, just look at the Hawkman fight scene when the guitar solo kicks in. It's one of still gives me chills. I just saw it on the big screen and it still gives me chills.
Yeah, it's great. It really is.
Okay, so I'm going to take you guys, your feedback on that, because I couldn't help but think, just for my first, you know, 100,000 foot view was, you know, it was 1980 and it was, you know, not too long before that was Batman, the TV series. And I thought that was campy, very cartoony. And so that's why I felt like the design of the clothing leaned towards those bright colors that would be, you know, evoking the comic strip.
But if you look at 80, that was the same year Empire Strikes Back. So, I mean, it was a very much, it's a, like, if you look at those two movies side by side, it's almost night and day, even though they come, they basically were birthed from the same mind. Literally, they were completely different. You know, Empire was dark, you know, Flash Gordon was colorful, campy, loud, you know.
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars, you know, the goal, I think, I forget who it was that said this, but Star Wars feels like it's a movie from outer space, not about outer space. Flash Gordon is like a movie that's about outer space. Like,
well, if you know the history, Lucas wanted to do Flash Gordon.
Oh, yeah.
And didn't get the rights. Yeah, yeah. And if you look at like Flash Gordon, it goes back. You can look it on Amazon Prime. They have the 1940s starring Buster Crabbe, the original Flash Gordon series. It was a comic book series. I have a 4 encyclopedia set with all the old newspaper comics. But like this, you know, it goes back to Buck Rogers being the first, I guess, astronaut comic hero, Flash Gordon second. Star Wars was birthed because Lucas couldn't get it. So yeah, it's kind of funny.
And also that style, Dino De Laurentiis, he had done two big comic book. People forget about this. They were comic books before they were movies. He had done two very big ones in Italy. One of them was Danger Diabolic, right? Danger Diabolic and Barbarella. Those are Dino De Laurentiis. This was not his first rodeo into the world of sci-fi comic book world. It's just those are Italian comic books that were also made for adults as well. So he knew what he was doing with the, you know, the costumes and the colors and everything and what he was kind of going for. And those movies are also kind of campy and crazy too, by the way.
Okay, well, speaking of people who know what's going on and what's doing, you guys, I know we could be talking forever, but I think we got to get to a clip here. Are you guys ready for our first clip?
Let's go.
Let's do it.
See, now that's interesting. In the 1940s, I don't know if Dino De Laurentiis didn't have the technology for it, but like that's the exact approach of the ship in the old. So I don't know if that was an homage. I'm assuming it is because I think the technology was there, but. How that landing scene, it's almost a replica of the old version. And isn't it ironic? It's kind of like landing on Earth and you're right in front of the White House. It's like, well, you're right in front of Ming's castle.
Yeah.
Well, I thought he said to pull them into it. I thought they directed it, right, for a safe landing.
No tractor beam and Flash Gordon. Get out of here.
Damn. We're okay. I just love the, like, the face popping in right there to the window. Like, hello?
Yeah.
Home? I don't think so.
And the other thing is the clunky armor.
But like the guards, you think they're like stormtroopers and they're kind of, you know, awesome. At least all the guards in Flash Gordon were complete idiots. I don't know if they, you know, don't have to fight anyone. And of course, they all speak English.
Friends.
Why would your gun, your bullet be a hand? That never made sense to me either. You couldn't just set your phasers for stun.
I'm just curious how much like power and energy that would require to extend that thing out. Like,
it's clear they're highly developed.
Is it wireless?
I'm sure
it has to be. You want to bet I saw it? No cables.
Like, they just look so awkward in their movements.
Yeah. My God.
They were ready for him. I mean, they're already in lineup. They're already, you know.
More like a police state.
If it is, that could be our good luck.
Why? Those are beautiful shots.
Allies on every side.
I was just going to say that's kind of
That's why I like being paired up with Matt. He looks at this film in a completely different set of eyes than I do. I'm like, I'm looking at like the history, the sci-fi, the music, and you're like looking at the art of it. That's awesome. I love it.
The guy that was doing the set designs was a guy named Ferdinando Scarfiotti. Scarfiotti, I think, is Scarfiotti, and the guy is amazing.
Hmm.
So, okay, this clip cracked it because at the very, very end there, you see what I call like the original drone. You know, a 1980s version of a drone camera greeting them. You know, and taking them in.
Well, it could have been like the Star Wars drone, the big basketball with the giant doctor needle. That was like the scariest, scariest thing as a child. Or like hate needles as it is, and you see that thing. But the fact that they were greeted by a drone, it's kind of a weird. I don't want to say weird, but just a And then if you go extend it into the scene, the drone sees that Zarkov has a gun in his pocket and zaps it.
Like,
yeah, disintegrates it out of his pocket. Not like you would have done anything with a 6-shot pea shooter in space, but you know, God love him for bringing a gun to a laser fight.
Okay, so here, okay, so that one scene alone right there is like, so it heats up the gun and then it dissipates, right? It's like, well, I mean, he didn't feel the heat in the pocket. It didn't affect the materials. Like, what kind of technology would that be? I'm just thinking.
I vote disintegration. Boba Fett technology.
Lasers.
Laser would have burnt his coat.
Something that detects, it's specific to the metal, right?
Magnetic-y.
But now we're getting into a thing, is there metal on Mongo? I mean, granted, I saw a lot of gold, but like, it, you know, is there metal like there is here? I don't know.
On Mongo, it's so passe. I mean, metal is so passe.
It's not even paved. They didn't have paved roads. It was all gravel and lava rock. Yeah. Get with the times, Ming.
Well, okay, so let's go back to that very first scene, which I thought was really interesting, was their depiction of a spaceship, right? Or a space traveling thing.
Yeah, space pod.
Right? Space pod, right? I mean, it was just plain white. There's like no controls. There's like I don't know where this professor thought they were going, because it didn't look like he had, that
if
was
you
it.
Didn't have the, if you didn't That's push right. the foot pedals down, you were going to blow up. That was the whole like, yeah. wait, what? And everyone
That's
had
why
to
he
put
them. Right.
And everyone had to do the foot pedals. If one person didn't do it, they're all going to blow up. So it's kind of a.
But there's no steering.
No.
These are all, you know, as the producer would say, these are all, these details do not matter.
If I no, hold on. If I want to go back, I think Munson, they were tracking Mongo, and Munson, who was also Porkins in Star Wars, by the way, for a little bit of reference. Munson had the planet tracked, and they might have plugged the coordinates in. They just didn't acknowledge it, but I'm going to go with that.
That's right. Porkins in one movie, Major Eaton.
Oh, he was, yeah.
In Raiders of Lost Ark.
He was, right? Yeah.
Lucas really liked to make fun of fat people.
It's a triple threat.
That's just it. Like, we'll just put it out there. He liked
as
to make fun
as
of
a large man, I do have the Porkins action figure, so I will.
Okay, so bring it back to Flash Gordon. So we're thinking about let's think about just the physical perimeter security of it, right? So I thought it was interesting that it felt like overkill, and at the same time, after this scene, there's a fight and they have absolutely zero control. Like, if Flash Gordon can beat up so many of these guards, I just kind of wonder if that building is truly secure.
Well, if you look at the very end, they turned on the force, or like there were 10 billion lasers got fired out of it, and there was a force field around the entire castle. So it is set up for like massive attack. Even though Flash Gordon did shoot, fly his the rocket ship through the window. Secure.
It's interesting to note that Ming has all the technology. All the other groups, the Hawkmen, everybody else, they all don't have the technology that Ming has. So,
well, what did he use?
Fear.
What did he use with the ring, though? He basically gave Dale a back rub or a body rub with the ring, and then he froze one of the Arborians. So, I don't think he was used for anything else. So it's kind of like, you wonder what tapping into the ring, what else he could do with that.
Right. But his whole kingdom, it's funny, his kingdom, like you said, it's got these lasers. He's got this, he's got that, he's got robot guards, he's got all of this new technology, but all the other groups, like, they're kind of on the low end. They don't really have any tech. They kind of live off the land. So
indeed. No, good call.
Yeah.
Again, it didn't feel very advanced for an advanced society. Right. Or he kept them.
It's steampunky. Did I just say that out loud? Don't ban me. Don't give me hate mail.
People say steampunk?
No, I just did. I haven't said that word in like 30 years. I just used it.
I'm judging you, Bob.
No,
and it's funny because he, you know, a part of that technology is that obviously he has the capacity to control the weather on planet Earth. That's why they're even there in the first place, is because Ming is screwing with the weather on planet Earth.
And I still don't know what hot hail is to this day. it's cold, but it's hot. You know, it's ice, but it's not.
Ooh, what chemical would that be? There's got to be some element, you guys, that, hey, our chemistry friends out there, go ahead and just like let us know what would be icy hot.
Yeah. Ming was a big cloud seeder.
Oh my gosh. Oh wait. Do you think he's responsible for the chemtrails then?
Yes.
Totally. That's so Mongo.
And yes, and he cares about people in little four-seat prop planes.
Yes.
That's playing quarterbacks and weather girls. What was Dale Arden's job? I forget what her job was.
So I think she's supposed to be like real estate or something like that, right? Or something.
He steals pilots out of little prop planes. That's what Ming does for fun.
Right. Oh my gosh. I mean, the beginning, that opening sequence just cracked me up. Well, here's what I don't understand. And guys, I know we didn't see it from this clip, but just talking about the movie in general, was they just met. And then within the first, 10, 15 minutes or 20 minutes of the movie, they're suddenly in love with each other and they can't live without each other. I'm like, did I miss a scene somewhere? Like,
I think if you get thrust into space and you're the same age as someone, you're going to latch on and you're going to get married and it doesn't matter. Like Topol wasn't going to do anything anyway. He's just a lonely scientist. He lived with Munson. I think it was inevitable. You put Tom Brady and Mila Kunis on that Flash Gordon plane and they're going to fall in love and like, protect me. And you go, oh, Flash.
Well, Flash had no problem hanging out with other ladies. Are you kidding me? He might have said he was in love with Dale, but he had an eye. He definitely had a roving eye.
We would all leave our wives for Ornella Muti. Let's just put that all on. I'll put that on the record. That is going to be on my tombstone. I will.
Well, okay. Another thing too, they are supposed to be Asian characters, right?
Ming is,
and his daughter. I'm assuming. I looked at the makeup. I'm like, I'm guessing that.
If you watch the Buster Crab ones in 1940, he was kind of Asian, but he like Ming's dynasty Asian, but he was.
The whole idea of the Orient, especially back then, right, was very exotic and different. And, you know, it felt like it was on another planet, you know, I'm blanking on his name. Was it Alex Raymond? Is that right? Who created Flash Gordon?
The original? Oh, yeah. See, stump me too. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's Alex Raymond. Is when he created it, like, I mean, you have to think, like, the idea to him, the most exotic, you know, human, you know, race was definitely Orient in the Orient.
I mean, it definitely is Asian-esque, probably more towards the Chinese, because it felt very Mongo City, like, and this, like, the armor just kind of felt very, like, Forbidden City-ish vibe kind of type thing. Sure. But anyway, okay. So, okay, what I like to ask you guys on a scale of 1 to 10, as far as from a realistic, this is going to be a fun one, knowing that they were in a rocket and landed randomly in front of the, you know, the Forbidden City equivalent, on a scale of 1 to 10, how realistic do you think that scene was?
Hang on. So there's a lot of preface to this. The homage to the original and holding true to what it was supposed to be, it's a solid 10. Okay. Realism. It, you know, nobody, you know, like they crashed and they didn't have, did they still, yeah, they landed and they didn't have their seatbelts on anymore. And they were completely unscathed and no cuts.
No, hair's perfect.
And they're just like, let's pop the door open. What's up? We come in peace. Like, I'm from Earth, you know.
And I guess there's oxygen immediately.
Yeah, the air.
Yeah. None of the guards, like, they all have masks on. So it would be nice to assume maybe we can't breathe this air, but yeah. Okay, so you're saying 10 from OG, but realistic.
Paying homage, comic,
again,
original.
Yes.
This was real life, if this was solid one.
US Dino, he's going to be like, details do not bother me. Yeah. Do not bother me with the details.
Oh, and the other thing, too, I thought was funny. So on that opening scene, I thought was funny was, of course, as you're walking in and you kind of like actually, wait, what was it? Oh, it was after the scene that we didn't review, but was all the women were like in bikinis. And I'm like, of course they're in bikinis. And then right when I said it was when all these other guys were like topless as well. Like, I thought that was funny. The wing people, but anyway.
All the Hawkmen.
The Hawkmen. Yes, yes. Okay. All right. Are we ready for our second clip, guys? Because I can tell we can keep going if we don't.
Let's do it.
Awesome.
It's a thought.
And of course, Flash knows how to ride or drive a. It's like Randy Quaid and. Or no, I'm sorry, not Randy Quaid. Will Smith. It's like, let's cop in an alien with Jeff Goldblum and let's pilot a foreign space vehicle.
Hey, could I call Dale on this?
She did give instructions, like left.
Not going to. Show me on a go kart.
You have to persuade me much better than that.
Okay, what accent is she supposed to have?
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Are you
that's
mad?
An Italian. She let can't shake that. She's not good enough to shake that Italian accent.
Just turn me into Dale.
And what I really loved is like she's like busy making out with him and then. Well. She's questionable morals. I mean, she does what she needs to do, clearly.
Of course. Yes.
Oh, my head.
And then now Dale's hungover.
Oh, Flash, if it only was you.
Is it to assume she did it already with Ming, or just she just was
hungover? No, she's hungover. Yeah, they gave her that drink.
I'm with you, Dale. Just concentrate hard and think.
And that's the thing. What's up with
telepathy? Over.
Can this be real?
Look, if my boyfriend's sitting there, I'm thinking of you while a girl's molesting him, I'm not going to be the happiest camper. I'm just saying.
But what's up with Ming and with Aura? They're both like everything. They're just like, Aura's like the Mongo slut, and then Ming has just got this harem.
Girls know how it is. Done to me.
I mean, who has time to do anything? Like, look at him. He's not stopping her.
Why is he sleeping, though? That was so... I'm just going to take a nap while I'm flying. How is she talking just to him? Why wouldn't Aura hear it?
It wasn't about you. Over.
Who would, like, is it like open radio, like ham radio?
Where?
Don't you think, like.
Maybe it's embedded Bluetooth. What do you think?
In your head?
Maybe. I don't know. Matthew's like, I have nothing to say to this.
Well, no, I mean, it's funny. You know, there's a new sound system that's out there called Atmos. I think it's called Atmos. It's crazy. So you can be sitting right next to somebody in the seat. I've experienced this. It was a guy that I knew that had a lot of money. He got this Atmos sound system. And if we were riding in a car together and I was in the passenger seat, and you're driving the speakers, they would tune in on specifically my ears. Okay. So I can play, it's playing a song on the radio, but it's zeroing in on my ears. You don't hear it. And I'm playing it as loud and I don't have the headphones on. And then you could be listening to something else without headphones.
Oh,
no idea. Yeah. Maybe
that would save.
There's the answer. It was the Atmos on Mongo.
That would save so many marriages.
Yes. Right.
I mean, we need that now. I mean, your wealthy friend probably got the front seat to that, but oh my goodness. Okay, so I love the fact that it reminded me of that cone of silence from Get Smart, that thing coming down. I was like, oh.
But she did got he tired use that? Was that, but see, like, if he had that to speak to Dale, what did Dale have to speak to him? Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
The crown on her head?
Could be. So now.
Then wouldn't every girl use that sort of technology if they could walk around with a crown on their head?
Okay. It, you know, it's funny. I actually wore like a pretend tiara. Okay. But if you've ever worn a tiara for a lengthy amount of time, it hurts your head or a headband.
Yeah, I hate when that happens. When I wear my
You know what I'm talking about, right, Matthew? I'm just saying.
Sure.
Well, okay, so but maybe her crown could we extend it would be like a 1980s version of like the Google glasses, but not glasses, but headband.
Hmm.
Am I projecting too much?
Maybe it's the old, it's just a POTS line that it's invisible POTS line connected to their heads.
Like, oh my God. Oh God. You know, I haven't heard POTS in like freaking forever. Plain old telephone. Thank you. And the fact that I would remember that, that's even more depressing.
So here's the weird part about that scene is like, I don't want to say his voice was squirrely, but I don't know if you know that wasn't his voice. It got dubbed over. I don't, you know, Matt knows. They went to do, like, there's a documentary on Amazon Prime called Life After Flash, and he talks about it at length, that they went to go shoot reshoots, and Flash Gordon's agent apparently was like, hey, you got to pay him right now. And Dino said, basically, if I pay him, you're done. I'll never want to see you again. So they did all the reshoots basically without him and dubbed his voice. Mm-hmm. It was a Canadian actor's voice. Because if you meet Flash, he's very California. Like when he sat and he's like, how you doing? Like, how you doing, Sam? He's like, spectacular. Like, he's very like raspy, like surfer voice, because he grew up in San Diego. So like that's, and if you look at like the Flash Gordon voice, it's a couple octaves up and it's a little, you know, so it doesn't match like the human, like the man. So it's just that it's hard to watch once you've met. Cause I remember meeting him 14 years ago at a Comic-Con up in Michigan. And when he spoke, this was pre Ted, I was like taken back going, that's your voice. Like, I didn't know the story. And then as the more I looked into it, you know, that was that's why his voice is kind of a little weird.
Okay. I thought it felt off. I felt the voice didn't match the face so much, but I thought it was more like the whole sound quality in general was almost like that 70s kung fu fighting slightly off, you know, just slightly off.
Yeah, yeah. What if I?
I'm sure.
So here's the kicker. If I'm on the phone with my wife, and as I'm speaking, you're going, what are you doing? I go, I'm driving down the road, going to pick up some Taco Bell. This girl is totally turning me on. And she's like, what? And you go, nothing. I'll talk about it later. That conversation's not stopping right there. That's going to be full blown out, like either on the phone or in person. I'm getting my whooped in one way, shape, or form. So, I mean, that might lead into the early relationship of Dale and Flash, but like, yeah, that's not flying with any woman. I think
would have led to Dale and Ming immediately.
Right.
And the first order of business is to obliterate Flash Gordon.
I get to rule a kingdom. Kiss my.
That's so funny.
And I'm sure from what I understand, again, it's like, you know, Mike Hodges directed this movie, and the guy was a serious director, and I'm sure he was turning to Dino saying, but it's not his voice. Details. Do not bother me with these details. I do not need to hear that.
Yeah. Dale would murder him. Do you can't use this line?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, I love it. Oh God, you guys. Okay, so I am having way too much fun, and I can't believe how fast time is flying by. All right. So I don't think we have enough time to do another clip, but to kind of pull us together and to tie it all up is on a scale of 1 to 10, on a real reality, technically, could we telepathically enter each other's brains for conversations? Do you think that is something that can be done?
Eventually.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Eventually. Yeah, I mean, it's in a galaxy far, far away. They could do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's people who are openly wanting to put chips in their head anyway. So I think there's some truth to that statement.
Okay. Don't watch Black Mirror season 7, episode 1 if you want to do the whole chip in the head thing.
That's funny, Bob, you mentioned we haven't done Black Mirror yet.
Oh, the new season's great. The new season's fantastic.
Black Mirror messes me up, man, you guys. I loved season 1, but it keeps you thinking. It makes you, mm-hmm. It's one of those shows that like I wake up in the middle of the night going, but what if? And it just disturbs me because I keep thinking, it's almost too intense for me because I keep thinking about it.
I don't know if they'll ever be able to top that first season and some of those episodes, but oh my gosh, they are on the money.
Seven knocked it out of the park. It was fantastic.
Really? Seven. Oh. Okay. See you guys. So I absolutely love to have you guys. I would love to have you back. You guys give me an episode or a movie or a TV show that you guys want to do. Please, I would love to have you guys come back. Final thoughts on Flash Gordon. Okay, Bob, you're going to go first. Why is this movie your like favorite movie? Why should somebody be like a Gen Zer who's never seen it? Why should they love it as much as you do?
So this is by far my favorite movie of all time. Caddyshack being a close second, Empire being third. And I will go into it as that it's, I'm a weird human being where it's mine. I was always back in the old days when I went to the bar, I drank Rolling Rock. Why? Because no one else did. It was mine. For me, there's this ownership of Flash Gordon in my circle and in my group of friends. And I love getting excited and teaching people about things that they might not know about. And it's easy to talk about Star Wars and get in arguments, but not a lot of people have been introduced to Flash Gordon. I kind of got immersed into it. And, you know, just again, I look at it through a different eyes than Matt does. He sees the art into it. I'm not a very artistic person. Was that the right word? I was going to say. but in my opinion, it's one of the, you know, and then the history behind it too, it makes it even better. And then finally getting to meet Sam Jones about a month ago was kind of the crown jewel of my comic life. So it's a 10 out of 10. Go watch it. Open-mindedly, because I know like a couple of my neighbors are in their 30s and I'm like, dude, you got to come see this scene. And I show them the Hawkman scene. And they're like, Bob, you're an idiot. And they walk out of my house and I'm like, don't get it. You don't get it. And if you don't get it, that's fine.
I'm not gonna lie to you. When I watched it with my boyfriend, I'm not gonna lie. I was like, I think I'm sober. I think I'm too sober for this movie.
That's pretty funny. So I enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the movie on a lot of different sort of levels, but I like movies specifically. I like a lot of films where I know what the audience may be looking at and seeing, but they're not seeing something deeper and something more interesting behind it. And to me, it is, if you're into fashion and if you're into film and if you're into set design, like you have to see this movie, regardless of what you think of it and the acting and all of it, because this was the height of Italian fashion. And there was no bigger film producer than Dino De Laurentiis. And, you know, the set designer and the costume designer, like that was it. So you may, you know, people may laugh it off and they do that with a lot of films sometimes, but like there's a lot going on with this film and the, you know, so
that's if you look at, and if you look at the superhero just genre, he's, you know, other than like Hawkeye, he's the only one with no powers. You know, he's the quarterback from the Jets. He's used like the, cause I even asked him and Sam Jones, who would win in a fight? You or Superman? He goes, no, I would team up with Superman. We go, you know, fight together. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that was the whole crux of it, is the bringing all these communities and all the planets together to kind of overthrow the bad guy. There's a lot to be, you know, like underlying about if that's a true superhero just cause he doesn't have powers. I think absolutely.
Okay. I was about to wrap it up. I have one last question if you guys happen to know it. If not, someone in the audience, please let me know. Did the Jets pay to have their brand
in the movie?
In the movie. Was that a thing in the 80s?
I remember that they let them like do a photo shoot on the field. I have a jersey and a football sign, a Jets, you know, it's the only thing I'll ever own. That's New York Jets. I don't think they paid like they do today. Like there's Pringles in Wayne's World and because they Frito-Lay gave him $100,000 or whatever. I think it was just, he was a water polo player in the original and you can't have a water polo player. So
yeah. And it's funny you bring up Superman, that whole thing with him and Superman. I believe if I can really pull it out of the vault, I believe there was a comic book from DC in which Superman teamed up with Joe Namath.
Intriguing.
And, you know, he was the ultimate Jet. And I would say 1980, we're not too far away. We're not too far away from Joe Namath still being a huge, that guy was one of the most famous people on the planet. Like he was worldwide huge. People forget that.
Yeah.
And,
we just remember him for trying to kiss Susie Colbert drunk on the sidelines in the 20 years ago.
Oh my gosh. I had forgotten about that. Yeah, no. Okay. Okay. So that's really good to know about product placement and all that. So the Jets benefited if they didn't pay. Someone loved him somewhere. So good on you guys. Don't know if you guys are a football team though. So I guess good luck this season. Anyway, is the season over? I'm so bad at this stuff. At any rate, guys, I would love to have you back. We need to have you back. So I'm going to have to force us to wrap up though. So I guess that ends it for another episode of Technophile Real Talk. Until then, we'll see you soon.
See ya. See ya.
Woo! We're done. Yay! Oh, I don't have my soundboard.